You're listening to Make It Thrive, the Company Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Lizzie Benton, Company Culture Coach and founder of Liberty Mind, and I want to inspire people to create progressive company cultures where our human potential can thrive. In this podcast, I talk to organizations, thought leaders, and change makers about the impact of company culture. Together, we can make it thrive. This season is sponsored by Semco Style UK. The Semco Style framework is a practical approach which helps organizations create a human-centered workplace and brings a proven method to enable you to shape how people experience work. Whether you're looking to transform your business for success, become more resilient to the challenges of an ever-changing world, or create a culture that delivers more engaged people, the Semco Style methodology can help you on your way. Are you ready to discover the tools to transform your organization? Visit semcostyle.co.uk. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Make It Thrive. How are you enjoying the season so far? Do drop me a message on LinkedIn or Twitter or Instagram, wherever you hang out, and let me know what you're enjoying the most or what you found most provoking, because I do love to hear from my listeners and to know that some of this information is getting out there and being put into action. We are seeing such an emergence of alternative ways of working that it still surprises me that companies insist on being so rigid in their approach to how we work. Today's guests are yet another great example of the shifts we're seeing and how working in a more autonomous way not only helps us live a happier, healthier life, but has a ripple effect on our community and our environment. Today, I'm joined by Lizzie Penny and Alex Hurst, co-authors of Workstyle, a revolution for well-being, productivity, and society. Lizzie Penny and Alex Hurst are friends, entrepreneurs, and changemakers. They have been leading the Workstyle revolution for a decade, co-founding a social enterprise, Hoxby, in 2014 to prove the concept, and they have helped thousands of workstylers around the world to set, project, and respect their own workstyles, and are conducting pioneering research into the link between autonomy, productivity, and well-being. Hoxby has delivered projects working in a workstyle way for some of the biggest businesses in the world, including Unilever, Amazon, AIA, and Sony. Today, we're going to dive into what workstyle is and how we need to embrace more autonomy in the workplace. So let's get started. Well, hi, Alex and Lizzie. Thank you so much for joining me on Make It Thrive today.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
So obviously today we are predominantly talking about your incredible book, Workstyle, Workstyle Revolution, which is going on. Tell us, what is Workstyle?
So Workstyle is a word that we created to give everybody a language and freedom to choose when and where they work for themselves and to describe it to one another. And that's really to replace the assumption that we all work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, which of course is actually no longer the case. Most of the work that people do can be done anywhere at any time. There are some exceptions, but in the main, we can now work anywhere and any time. And that is an opportunity for everybody to be able to fit work around life rather than life having to fit around work as it has done.
Amazing. Love that. It fits so much in with my own philosophy and approach to work. So I absolutely love the book. And I love the branding that you guys have done around this as well. It is like a true kind of, a true revolution vibe. Like the logo and everything is just like something that you want to put on a banner and go and kind of do a bit of a public protest with.
I've got actually a placard right next to me. It doesn't really work on a podcast to show it.
Love that you have a placard. That is totally the vibe. Love it. So where did Workstyle come from? What's the journey that you guys took to create the book and to kind of find this way of working?
Well, I think the journey started a long time ago. It actually started at the back end of 2014 in a pub, funnily enough, as apparently most good ideas originate from in the UK. And Lizzie and I were really had a meeting of minds. We were both kind of lamenting the rigidity of the traditional work system. And it was there where we came up with the idea for Work Style. But I should probably give you a little bit more background as to why we were lamenting that system. So for me, by the time I got to the pub that night, I'd already reached burnout. I'd become really detached from my work, ambivalent to the highs, numb to the lows, and really just a shadow of myself, according to my wife. And I'd been away on holiday to try and kind of give myself a break and kind of deal with that. But I can't really tell you anything about the holiday because I wasn't present enough to be forming any actual memory of it. And that was actually the thing that that made me realise when we got back and that nothing had really changed, that I came to the realisation that this was a mental health challenge that needed to be overcome, and time wasn't necessarily the healer of that wound. I needed a new psychological contract with work, one that was less about how much I was doing, because I'd always validated my value on how many hours I was putting in, whether I was doing a 60-hour week, and that was pretty much what I did every day for a number of years until I reached that point. So instead of validating my value on the basis of how much I was putting in, start to validate my value more on what I was achieving, what the output was, what the impact of that was, and take fulfillment from that and almost forget how much work it was. And that was the kind of the starting point from my perspective for us to look at could we create work where it didn't matter when and where you worked or how many hours you put in, but more we were judged on our output. Mm. And Lizzie's story is different, but I'll let her tell her side of the story.
So, yeah, for me, it was when I had my first child, my wonderful son, Finn, that I would say my eyes were opened to the enduring inequalities at work. And I'm embarrassed to say that until then, I'd basically been pretty ignorant to those people who were being excluded from work. But suddenly I didn't want to work during Finn's waking hours. I wanted to work in the evenings or during nap times. And I really want to be judged on my output rather than being in an office at a time when traditional work said that I should be. And obviously that's the thing that led me to the meeting minds with Alex in the pub. But 2 years after that conversation, I had some serious complications during my second pregnancy with my twin daughters, Zoe and Megan. And that meant having surgery at 23 weeks and then 9 weeks of bed rest. And actually being able to work from bed during those 9 weeks was transformational. I only told a select few people what was going on in my life from a personal perspective. And work was a really welcome distraction and a world to escape into during really long anxiety-ridden days at home on my own. And we were incredibly lucky that against the odds, both our daughters survived. But the day we brought them home from hospital in London and couldn't fit the pram through the front door of our flat, we decided it was time to move across the country to Bristol. And I was very lucky to be able to do that with absolutely no disruption to the way I worked. And then fast forward to 2020, and out of the blue, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And that just turned my world upside down. But again, work style was my outlet. You know, I could escape into my digital world as much or as little as I felt up to that day or week. And it helped pass the time in the chemotherapy chair. It helped the cancer diagnosis not to define me. But also it helped for cancer not to completely take over my thoughts, which is a really difficult thing to do and to live with in that situation. And since then, almost unbelievably, my husband has been diagnosed with cancer. So now, you know, my work style is about fitting my work around supporting him through his treatment, managing the side effects of my medication, staying healthy myself, and looking after three small children. So for me, the kind of origin story was what took me to the pub, but actually it's in the time since then that I've really come to acutely feel the benefits of work style and understand why this is so important for so many people.
Mm. I mean, so much has changed since we came up with the idea, but it's probably worth saying at this point that we didn't just come up with the idea at that point. We created a business to prove that it could work. So we created a company called Hoxby in the early part of 2015, where everybody would have the freedom to choose when and where they worked for themselves. And so when Lizzie talks about how her work style has had to evolve over time, it's been within Hoxby that that's been possible. So we created this community. It has actually a community of around about anywhere between 500 and 1,000 people, amazingly talented and diverse people all around the world. But they work freelance. And really that's because freelancing is as close to the full level of autonomy as you can get within current employment law. So we pull people together into teams to work on projects where each person is able to work to their own work style. And most of the work we've delivered over that time has been in the kind of creative and communications space, delivering projects for clients like Unilever, AIA, Merck, Amazon, Divine, B-Lab. And so we've learned a huge amount since then, that was in 2015, about what it means to work this way. And what we're really talking about is what it means to work with autonomy. Mm. Now, there was loads of research that's been around for a number of years, actually, that looks at and proves that autonomy is better for work-life balance. It's better for engagement, it's better for productivity, better for job satisfaction, reduces stress, reduces staff turnover, reduces exhaustion. But there's little to no practical evidence as to why or where that's been put into practice. So we wanted to prove that as well. So we conducted some of our own research within Hoxby over the last 3 or 4 years now to look at the link between autonomy and productivity. And what we found is that it is well-being that explains the link between autonomy and productivity. So that is to say, the reason autonomy increases productivity is because of an increase to personal well-being. So that's been kind of big, I guess, revelation and one of the big things that we wanted to include in the book that makes the case pretty convincingly that autonomy is the future of work that we should all be striving for. And hence the book, and hence why the book has come out now, because in the kind of post-pandemic timeframe that we're in, this inflection point in human history, we've got an opportunity to rethink the way we work. Eyes have been opened to doing things differently at a total company level and at an individual level. So we need to make the most of that opportunity and not to digress and to revert back to what we are comfortable with and what we know, but instead create a future that is going to be better for our well-being, better for our productivity, and ultimately better for society, which we can come on to explain.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness. I mean, first of all, what journeys? I mean, you know, it really goes on to, you know, I think people are probably within these kind of camps of yours as well, you know, with you, Alex, you know, that experience of burnout, unfortunately, is becoming all too regular, isn't it, within the workplace? I mean, that is something that I know so many people can relate to. But then also with you, Lizzie, with your, you know, life experiences that are going on, you know, really bad things happen to people and we still have to try and work around that. And, you know, we have things happen and we can't just all of a sudden go, oh no, I need to, you know, pretend that my life doesn't exist or can't keep splitting ourselves into two separate people. It just doesn't work for our well-being. So I know there'll be many people that can really relate to this.
And I think that the thing that, you know, people say, oh, Lizzie, you have had me, Lizzie, two Lizzies here. Very people say, Lizzie, you've had a really tough couple of years. And do you know what? everyone's had a tough couple of years. In their own way, everyone has their own problems. You know, everyone has their own shit going on. And I think that what work style does is it's recognition of that, of the fact that actually no one's life is easy breezy. And you can't just say, okay, this is work 9 to 5, 5 days a week, and everything else just has to fit around it.
Yeah.
You know, that just isn't, firstly, it isn't good for our mental health, as we know from Alex's kind of story. But also, it's not the way we have to work. We can fundamentally work in a different way. You know, technology enables us now to work in a way that's fit for a digital age. And it's actually a bit baffling when you hear all that evidence about autonomy that Alex was talking about, and you see that technology has now enabled it. And during the pandemic, in horrible circumstances, people tried it and it basically did work in spite of the circumstances. And yet now we're seeing people go back to their offices, you know, whether it's hybrid, flexible, whatever you call it, people are going back to a more traditional way of work again.
And I think to speak to my own experience on that, you know, the reason I think that I ultimately came to burnout was, yes, because I was validating my value on the basis of time. But the reason I was doing that was because that was the terms of the deal of an employment contract that says you work a certain number of hours and you do it from the office, and that's how you do it. And there's not actually anything to say that you can do it any differently. It's very, very restrictive. And so your sense of control is sincerely diminished as a result of that. And that's where we think control and enabling people to have more control is where the answer lies. Because when you look at flexible working, hybrid working, remote working, anything that's controlled by the organization or mandated fundamentally isn't enabling people to have autonomy and freedom of choice. And this is the big risk with those companies that revert to what we know or what has gone before, is because they want to retain that control. But fundamentally, that's where the problem lies. And that's where we need to help everybody. And that's why Workstyle exists.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, for those who are maybe thinking, you know, okay, it sounds a little bit, you know, like hybrid, flexible working, or even self-organization. What's kind of the difference? What's kind of the secret sauce of work style, would you say?
So I think it comes back to autonomy, because you can talk about autonomy and all those benefits that Alex talked about before, but actually working with true autonomy is something different. And that's why we created the word work style. Because we felt like you have freedom to choose the elements that make up your lifestyle, and you should have freedom to choose your work style as well. And we wanted this kind of neutral language. So, you know, hybrid working is a post-pandemic concept, right? Like broadly, but it does hanker back to that 200-year-old system of the 9-to-5 working day, which was first conceived of by Sir Robert Owen, you know, more than 200 years ago. That's Industrial Revolution type thinking. And even flexible working is 70 years old, and it basically isn't working, we don't think, for three reasons. So firstly, it's flexing around an outdated industrial age system, whereas we think that actually we don't believe that outdated system should even exist, and we think we need to work in a way of working that is more fit for the digital age we live in. The second reason is it creates in-group, out-group dynamics. So essentially what we mean by that is the prevailing way of working is still 9-to-5, 5 days a week. And that means that anyone who works differently from that is seen as special. And we feel like we need a new system of work that doesn't have the negative connotations of shirking from home, you know, being a part-timer, or being told you're a flex pest, or whatever it is. There are lots of negative connotations that make you feel special and different if you're working flexibly, where the prevailing way of working is 5 days a week, 9-to-5. And then the third massive thing is that for many groups who are structurally excluded from work, flexible working, hybrid working, the 4-day work week, it simply isn't creating change fast enough, or in fact, at all. So there are some groups like older workers, carers, those with a chronic illness, for whom those small changes at the edge of an industrial age 5-day week just doesn't create enough change. And one example would be people who identify as neurodivergent. So we know that 77% of people with autism want to work, but only 26% do. I mean, that is a chasmic 51% gap of people who want to work at a time we've got UK labour market shortages, but can't engage with work because of the inherent structures of 5 days, 9 to 5, office based. So for us, that is probably the biggest reason why we feel flexible and the hybrid aren't working, because they aren't fundamentally enough changing the system in order to make it a level playing field for everyone to get involved.
Absolutely. And in terms of, I suppose, people that have listened to this podcast sort of regularly, there's been a lot of talk about sort of self-management or self-organization. Is there any kind of similarities to work style? Obviously, there's a high level of autonomy. Are there any kind of nuances that you guys have seen differently in terms of autonomy or anything like that?
I think the big thing about work style and to a degree self-organizing structures is about realizing that you, the individual, are in control of your work style, not somebody else. And that's a huge psychological transition to make, which is to say, okay, it's no longer down to my employer to tell me where to be or when. That's within my control, as long as I deliver a great output. And that as long as is critical to this as well, which is you have to be accountable for your work. So it's all very well having autonomy, but without accountability, that descends into anarchy. So accountability for your work, but also for your work style is key. So that's a completely different sense of ownership and mindset around work that we help people to understand and implement, because we found pretty early on when we were implementing work style, you know, people would come and join Hoxby and they'd say, and we'd say, oh, so what's your work style? That's our favorite question. And they would say, oh, well, what do you want it to be? And we'd say, well, no, that's not the point.
No.
It's up to you to define it for yourself. So although we were creating an environment for people to come together and do work, we weren't the people who were in control of that. They were. And getting over that that mindset has been key for them and for everybody. And that's the thing that really has unlocked their performance and their well-being as a result. But as I say, that comes with accountability. And the way that we do that at Hoxby is to focus on output, like we talked about with where the whole idea came from in the first place, which is to say, what am I accountable for? And build a contractual relationship, whether formalized or informal, that is based on the delivery of that output. Therefore, everybody knows what we're doing, either that as an individual contribution to the collective output or the overall collective output of the team. Focusing on that is key to understanding what you're accountable for and making sure that you're delivering against that. And then your work style becomes a matter of personal choice, because what matters is what you're delivering. That's a shift of mindset, but not so much for freelancers, because they're used to scoping work in that way. So that's a mindset that freelancers are naturally more developed at. But it's a mindset that we think the workforce of the future will become more adept at and will need to, because it's the thing that enables us to work anywhere, anytime in the most productive way. So I think that's probably the big thing that we've discovered and implemented.
And going back to your point there, Alex, about, you know, to a lot of companies, I mean, I've definitely experienced this myself, you know, autonomy, when you speak about autonomy, people go, that sounds like anarchy, that sounds crazy, you know, this just sounds like a laissez-faire kind of environment where anything goes. And, you know, where do you help people see a difference in work style and kind of, how do you help shift that mindset? Because it is really hard when we're in these very controlling, bureaucratic organisations to really help them see that shift in what autonomy can actually unleash.
I think that actually really early on, so, you know, we openly say that Hoxby is a big experiment. You know, it's a prototype. We set up Hoxby in order to test work style, and we continue to test and learn and get lots of things wrong. But we very quickly learned that what you can't do is say everyone here can work any way they want, because actually, if you want people to have the freedom to choose when and where they work, you do need to put some parameters around it so that everyone understands the kind of framework of engagement. And I think that's when you talk about how it's different from self-organizing. The thing that we've shared in the book, and the reason we wrote the book, was because for 5 years, people looked at us like we were a bit weird working this way. Then a global pandemic came along and suddenly everyone wanted to know how we worked, and we started trying to open source it, and that turned into a book. So that's kind of where it came from. But we wanted to make sure that we were sharing with everyone what we felt organizations needed to put in place, as well as for the individual. So we quickly learned three really important lessons. So the first one is be digital first, not physical first. And as you said, Lizzie, for those of us who've worked in traditional businesses, that is a complete mindset shift. But Hoxby, Slack is our office. You know, Google Meet is our meeting room, and our water cooler is a digital channel. So that's something that I think organizations need to adopt to make this work. And secondly, working asynchronously. So getting in the mindset of not having to work at the same time as each other synchronously, but instead being able to set the right structures and toolkits and technology up so that people can choose when and where they work. And actually, it's a massively productive way to work and can also be really fun and highly collaborative. And then the third thing is investing in a trust-based culture. That work style basically only works if it's underpinned by trust. And for us, that cannot be just saying that you trust people. It has to be really demonstrated and, you know, role modeled by leaders, recognized, rewarded. And I think for a lot of organizations, that's about understanding the journey they need to go on. You know, we now consult to organizations about implementing work style in their organizations. And actually, no one has said, we're going to do it in the next 6 months. And rightly so, because you can't do that. You have to go on a journey and recognize the destination is autonomous working. And if you don't do that, you will lose out on competitive advantage, because great talent will go somewhere else. Your best ideas won't be created by diverse teams. So actually, organizations need to do it, but it's about going on that journey and making these changes to set up for sustainable autonomous work style working.
Love that. So they're like the conditions needed for work style to succeed, like a really high level of trust. Yeah. And especially in terms of, like you said, that kind of mindset that this is a journey, this is an evolution, this isn't just some quick fix. We're not going to be autonomous overnight.
No, we're not.
Definitely. I mean, this is the next imaginable future, I think. You know, if you look back at the 9-to-5 and its conception in the industrial age, most of the work we were doing was factory-based. It was place-based, and getting everybody together to work at the same time was essential to the way that work was done. I think at that time, probably the service economy may have contributed, I don't know, 10-20% of the economy overall. Now it's more like 70%. And the manufacturing economy is the minority, and the majority of work is therefore now able to be done anywhere at any time. And as we move further and deeper into the digital age, that's only going to increase, I suspect. And working alongside technology is going to be our future. But we're right at the start of it, really. When you think about where we've got still to go, we've been conditioned to think work gets done together in the same place between the hours of 9 and 5, Monday to Friday, because we've been doing it for 200 years. But I honestly can't imagine that in 200 years' time, we'll be saying the same thing, that we still do that. We still work in a way that's anchored in industrial age.
In 200 years, Alex, they'll be saying, they came up with the concept of work style 200 years ago. We're still working.
We still haven't done it.
They better not.
A bit dismal failure.
Yeah.
I suppose
suppose my biggest question, and this is something that I come up against all the time, because obviously being in the kind of very similar vein of work of sort of self-organizing and progressive organizations, you know, one of the questions that gets thrown at anyone that's trying to progress work is, well, how will it work for those industries who are in essence less flexible, let's say, you know, for example, construction or healthcare or, you know, education, those kind of things. What do you say to those people who are trying to kind of, you know, throw those into the works as a way of saying, oh, well, this can't possibly work?
Yeah, we're asked that all the time. I mean, the first thing to say is that, as Alex just said, the service economy makes up a massive part of the global economy now. And so actually, firstly, even if you only did this for knowledge workers, it would have a massive impact. And by the way, the 9-to-5, 5-day a week working week doesn't work for loads of people, and we're still doing it. So, but actually, we say that work style is as much an attitude as a structure of work. So it's about thinking, do I need to work in a fixed shift pattern, for example? Can you give autonomy to those individuals to swap shifts, change their shifts, so that they can collaborate to work out what's best for them as individuals? So really, for us, we have full recognition that there is a huge, huge value in place-based working, and lots of people simply need to be in a physical place. But we believe in the individualization of work, and that means making working harder to make individual work fit around the individual. And so, for instance, you look at crisis industries such as midwifery. It might be that where there is a staffing crisis, they have to look differently. And the NHS, more broadly, you know, it's got record high levels of vacancies. Perhaps the only way to fill those vacancies is to think a bit differently about work. And that's not to say you don't need to be in the hospital, because you probably do, or the GP surgery, or the fact is some of it is place-based, but still, could you bring a more individualized approach to that? So that's our feeling, is that we could do more even for place-based workers.
Absolutely. And you mentioned as well, in terms of the book as well, you've obviously done a lot of research into autonomy and the power of autonomy in terms of well-being and productivity. I mean, you know, I'm a big optimist. That's probably why I do the work that I do as well. But, you know, obviously we see the impact when this autonomy takes place, and the ripple effect it has on society. I mean, from your research, what's been some of the most kind of profound and, you know, supercharged ideas that you're just like, come on, this has got to get people taking this forward?
There are two big ones for me. The first one would be that 50% of Brits suffer from loneliness in the workplace. And so many people say to us, yeah, but how do you get that connection if you're not in the same physical space? Half of people who are in the workplace are lonely because they're sitting next to someone on a Zoom call rather than actually engaging with the people that they're near. So I think that one is one that's really stuck with me. And another one is about sitting for 9 hours a day. So averagely, you know, a working adult would averagely sit for 9.5 hours a day. That is as damaging as smoking. It's as damaging as going down the coal mines, you know, years ago. And for me, that was another real wake-up call. Like, there's a massive well-being element to this, which is about personalizing our work environment. You know, Alex, listeners can't hear, but Alex and I are both standing up. We both have standing desks. It's about personalizing your environment for you to find it motivating, but also to keep you healthy. So there's a big physical element of this as well. I mean, the book has 600 references in it. It's fun, but it's quite a lot of data in there as well. And I would just say the thing that Alex and I found in writing the book was that everything we'd seen borne out anecdotally is also backed up by research. And I think that's why it kind of took us from being already very passionate about this to really, really believing that everyone needs to work this way.
If you haven't picked up the book yet, it's not as heavy as it might sound as a result of 600 references, because we did actually have to put them online as to keep the weight of the book down to a manageable size. It does look like quite a big and overwhelming book, but it's actually apparently very readable and enjoyable.
It's very funny, Alex. It's very funny. It is,
well, we think so. We think so. But we always say that. One of the things I would add to that, I think, probably is about during the pandemic, there was quite a lot of press around the inclusion of people who are working but have a physical disability. And during that time, they felt like an included member of the workforce. And that was revolutionary for them. And that is really what we've been talking about for all these years, which is, if you break down the barrier to inclusion of place and time, actually you can create work that's more inclusive. And that's what we're trying to do. In doing that, we're able to access more of the available workforce nationally and internationally. So that's got to be a good thing for bringing diversity of thought into businesses and into the act of solving problems, which, by the way, we also know is proven to make our problem solving better. The composition of cognitively diverse teams, and effectively the opposite of groupthink, there's an opportunity there, collective intelligence of our organizations and of our teams, if we can lower the barriers to inclusion for the many millions of people who can't access work in a traditional 9-to-5 way.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Absolutely. It's such a shame that it's taken a pandemic for us to consider that inclusion is part of, you know, work style and the way we work. It really is.
Well, the worrying thing is that, of course, lots of businesses are going back to the way things used to be done, regardless of that evidence, regardless of the fact that their employees who have physical disabilities are saying that this was great and let's keep doing it. It's still happening, unfortunately. So we have a responsibility. I think this is the thing that we must ensure we understand here, which is, this generation of leaders, of decision makers within organisations and within government, have a responsibility to implement the necessary change now, because it's going to take time for that to come to anything. But right now, this inflection point, this post-COVID opportunity, is so big that we have to realise that we have that responsibility and do something positive with it.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. So you've got the book to help people join the movement and get inspired. What's next for you guys? What's next on the...
So much. Mission? The relentless, the relentless driving of a revolution. Currently, what we're doing is, we found it really rewarding to speak to lots of people who have read the book and it's inspired them to work differently, either as an individual or as an organisation. And we are currently looking for 10 workstyle pioneers, so 10 organisations for us to consult to in implementing workstyle in a broad range of businesses, large, small, charity, not-for-profit, for-profit, public sector, private sector. So we are now looking for those 10 businesses for us to work with over the next 3 years in order to implement work style in different types of organizations, because we recognize we are the extreme end of a spectrum, and we can only create global change at a kind of total level if we can take work style into pre-existing organizations. So that's the next thing, and just hopefully getting lots of people to read the book.
Amazing. What an experiment. That's going to sound really interesting. I look forward to hearing all about that, guys.
So I'll come back and tell you about it.
Yes, please do. So tell us, where can we find you? Obviously, you've got the book. I'm going to put your website in the show notes. Is there anything else you want people to take action on after this session?
You can follow us at Workstyle Revolution. We're on Instagram and LinkedIn. We also have... our own personal Instagram and LinkedIn accounts. We are Alex the Workstyler and Lizzie the Workstyler. Feel free to follow us there for behind the scenes content on what it's like to fit your work around your life. But I think they're the main things. We're also, actually, I'm not going to say that. Sorry.
Speaking at various events.
I was going to say we're speaking at various events, but I don't know when this is going to go out.
Amazing. Oh, thank you both so, so much for joining me today. And yeah, I just feel like this is definitely going to be something practical that people can take away, and another inspiring talk to get us on the movement to change the way we work. So thank you both so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast, with me, your host, Lizzie Benton. If you've enjoyed listening and want to keep up with all things culture, don't forget to subscribe. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you back next week.